Hey friends, it's your host, Shane Blackshear. I want to remind you that Seminary Dropout is, yes, supported by listeners like you. You can go to supportseminarydropout.com to check that out. But also, Seminary Dropout is sponsored by Compassion International. I'm so excited to be partnering with Compassion. Compassion is the world's leading authority in holistic child development through sponsorship. They take care of kids, in some cases with prenatal care, and go all the way through leadership development for qualified young adults and everything in between. I highly recommend that you support them, that you sponsor a child. I have for many years. Go to compassion.com/dropout and check out what they do and sponsor a kid today. All right. You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! My guest is Charles E. Moore. Charles is a regular contributor to Plow Quarterly. Books he has compiled and edited include Called to Community, which we're here to discuss today, Bearing Witness, Provocations, Spiritual Writings of Kierkegaard, and Leo Tolstoy, Spiritual Writings. Moore lives at the Mount Community in New York State with his wife and daughter. Charles, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I look forward to the time we have together.
You know, most of these chapters are by folks who have been deceased for a while, and so most of them you compiled, and then I think a few of them you probably commissioned from people. I was wondering what you had in mind when you set out to compile the chapters for this book.
Well, you know, it's a journey. This book is actually a result of a journey. I have been living in community for many years and have read a great deal on the subject. And over the years, I've just collected pieces by some of my favorite authors, many of whom have lived in community, that I, felt personally very much challenged by and helped me towards this journey of living a life of Christian community with others. And so some of these authors are well known. They've written on many other subjects. So you have, folks as great as Fyodor Dostoevsky, who did not live in community, but then you have, Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Jean Vanier and others. So this book is kind of a bit of a culmination of some of the insights that I have gleaned from very seasoned spiritual writers. And like I mentioned, I tried to include those who have lived in some kind of community so that what they write is something from their experience and not just what they visualize or envision intellectually.
When you mentioned that you yourself live in community, can you just describe what that community is like?
Sure. Well, currently I am a member of the Bruderhof community. It's an international community that began in Germany in 1920. The community I live in consists of about 150 folks, men, women, and children of all ages in New York. We actually have several communities in New York. Now, I was not raised in a community. I was raised as a typical upper middle class suburban kid in Northern California, and I never envisioned that my life would be led in this direction. This is the community I've been a part of for now 25 years. Prior to that, I have been a part of a more informal but intentional community in the inner city of Denver. So this life and community has been part and parcel of my Christian journey and search for what it means to be a disciple of Christ.
Is it the physical structure? Is it a big house? Is it like an apartment complex? How does that work?
Well, this particular community, the Mount community, is somewhat unique. We purchased this a piece of land that had a very, very large Catholic seminary that had been defunct for a number of years. And so we purchased this land with a very large stone structure, partly because it would help to house a high school that we wanted to start. But most of our communities do not have such a large structure. A typical community would have numerous buildings, and families would share apartments together in a particular residential building. But there would be other kinds of structures, some kind of workshop, farming, an educational building of some sort for our elementary school children. So usually our larger communities are like a campus that is located on a piece of property that people live on, and everything is in walking distance.
Is your community a church in and of itself? Do you have liturgy together, or does that take place off campus, as it were?
That's a good question. That's a hard one to answer. Hard one and yet simple. And I'll put it this way. We seek to be the church together, to live the church together. So we don't have a separate building or a separate place that we go and worship. We believe our whole life should be one of worship. So we don't go to church somewhere at some time. We seek to live out being the body of Christ on a daily daily basis. So stemming from a more Anabaptist tradition, our worship is more fluid, organic. Our liturgy is our life together, woven hopefully in a seamless way together of threads of prayer. Of reflection, of fellowship, of work, and various kinds of activity.
You mentioned some of those that you included in the book, folks like Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It's unfortunate you couldn't call him up and commission a chapter specifically for this book. But for those that you did, that were maybe you knew more personally, I wonder what instructions you gave them when you commission them to write a chapter.
Okay. Well, very few pieces were actually commissioned. Good friend of mine, Alden Bass, who is in a small community in St. Louis, teaches at St. Louis University. I asked him to write the chapter entitled The Way, and chapter 10, which is a beautiful chapter telling the story of community through church history. And so we had quite a bit of back and forth. I wrote several chapters myself for the book to supplement some of the things I couldn't find. And so actually Alden really is the only one that I actually commissioned. Well, I'll take that back. Howard Snyder, who has written for many, many years, I asked him to rewrite a chapter from a book that he published 25 years ago. So most of these are selections that I have found meaningful, that had already been published. And I put in what I thought covered many of the topics, issues, and questions people have about community. But there is some overlap in different places.
Hey there, friends. I hope you're enjoying this interview. I wanted to cut in real quick and tell you about an event coming up that I'm really excited about. I'm going to do an episode of Seminary Dropout live from my house here in Austin, Texas, and I want you to come. So it's going to be July 1st, and I'm going to be interviewing a new friend of mine, Andrea Lucado. She's written a book called English Lessons, and I want you to come. The space is limited. You're going to be sitting in my living room, and Andrea and I will be sitting in our kitchen where we'll be talking. please go sign up. To do that, go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. Go there, look at the events, it'll be there, and sign up. If you are coming for sure, then please sign up. I hope you can come. I hope to see you here July 1st. For the time and the address and all that stuff, go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123, and hope to see you there on July 1st. All right. When you talked to those folks that did write specifically for this book, what were your instructions for them?
Well, for Alden Bass, who wrote this chapter, kind of a historical survey, there are historical surveys that have been done on the theme of community. But what I wanted him to do is weave it together as a story. And he uses a wonderful metaphor of the Roman road and a journey. And so I wanted his essay to be informative, but very readable and engaging, and not get bogged down on a lot of details and facts. And he really did an awesome job. I've received a lot of comments of appreciation for that particular chapter. Hmm. With Howard Snyder, I wanted him to just simply update some of what he had written previously, just to take into account our current situation, in particular the internet and the virtual worlds that we live in. And so he adapted his piece to kind of bring it up, but substantively it remained the same. And there he discusses very specifically what are the forces at work that keep community from happening in today's world. So he was gracious enough to just make some changes to just bring it up to date.
In the first chapter that you yourself wrote, it's titled "It Takes Work," and
right.
You know, I thought that was really poignant because I think a lot of us really romanticize the idea of communal living and don't realize the work that it takes to make that happen and for it to continue to happen in a peaceful way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you're right. We tend to idealize, romanticize, fantasize about what life would be like in community with others, where there's peace and harmony. It's a longing, I think, that God has created us to have. I have a number of chapters in there about the realistic aspects of community, because community in the end involves individuals, fallen individuals. And so in that chapter, I really wanted to emphasize that, like a good relationship or like in a marriage, it takes work. We all want the fruit of a wonderful relationship with another person or a wonderful family. We'd like to see the fruit, but and the same thing with community. But there's a lot of things that have to take place for the fruit to come beforehand. So I wrote some from my own experience. Most of the chapters that I write is definitely rooted in my own experience with weaved together with some biblical reflection. And I would like to just mention that, you know, a book that has come out recently, The Benedict Option, which you may or may not be aware of. Many people have read that. And one of the critical, one of the things that comes out critically of it is that it can romanticize what a new kind of monastic life would be like. If you really read it carefully, you realize that there is a lot of pain, a lot of sacrifice, but you know nothing good comes in the end without that, and that's true in most of life.
I'm very aware of the Benedict option. It's been a lot of ink has been spilled, as it were, on the internet about that book lately. And I was thinking about it as I was reading Called to Community, and that's I was, you know, curious of your take on it. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I've met Rod Dreher and appreciate his work. I hope that this book actually puts a little bit more hands and feet of what it's going to take to actually do life together in Christ.
Well, let's talk about some of those specifics. One of the things that you discuss, and it comes up periodically in the book, is the role of money. And I think it stuck out to me because I felt like that is going to be one of the harder things for people to stomach. Because it's so antithetical to just an American way of life. The idea of kind of surrendering your wallet to the community, so to speak. And I just wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that is going to be a hard one for people to swallow. You know, the issue of money actually is symptomatic of a deeper issue, and in my mind, it's your own autonomy. And what I mean by that, it's not your freedom, true freedom, but to meld together with other people means you're willing to forego all your preferences. You're willing to self-limit your own freedom for the sake of another person in the relationship. And, you know, money is power. Money enables us to live autonomously, separately, without the need of others. And to say I'm going to give everything in, including my wallet, is to say I'm in this so that something greater than myself can be given. And again, I like to use the imagery of a marriage, that to form a shared life together, you're willing and ready, and if there's real love, joyfully melding together on all facets of life. You want to share a common home. You want to have children together, your own children. You want the economic resources that you have. You bring it together into one pot, so to speak, and because you want to forge a common life together, that's the urge of love. And I think if we look at it in that way, all kinds of wonderful things come out of that you don't get when you hold back, your time, when you hold back your talents, when you hold back your finances. And I think with the help of the Holy Spirit, we can be freed from the myth that money is power. Actually, money, mammon, enslaves us. And it keeps us from being empowered towards the things that really matter. Unity, fellowship, sharing, joy in one another. These kinds of things.
I think for a lot of people, the idea of privacy is also wrapped up in money. Like, that's for a lot of people, that's the thing that they want to be most private about. They don't want people to know how much they make and much less what they spend on. And I think privacy is also a recurring theme in the book, and the idea of letting go of some of that.
Yes, I think so. I think the deeper you go, the more you want to reveal. And there is a trust. You have to, ultimately, a community is something that is, you're responding to the call of God to live out more authentically, more completely the gospel and the values of the kingdom. And when you do that, that means vulnerability, but it means, revealing more of who you are. And in that way, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper, and I need somebody to also hold me to account, because I know my own propensity is to rationalize my own selfishness. And so to declare war on the flesh, so that Christ and who he is comes to greater expression, not just in my own life, but in the midst of my relationships, I need others to hold me accountable. And so I will want to open up and let go so that then that may happen. And that means, yeah, letting go of some of one's own privacy.
Well, let's talk about the idea of proximity. You've talked about how you live in an actual physical space with other people. For some, that's not entirely possible. But I wonder what role, as a minimum, proximity plays into experiencing true community with people.
Well, I believe proximity is crucial. We are embodied creatures. Actually, God, we're finite, even though we like to think that we're not. And we fool ourselves through technology to think that we can be omnipresent. And in so doing, we become more and more disembodied. And therefore, we lack the capacity to actually truly know and be known by another. So I think proximity is crucial. Does that mean living under the same actual roof and so forth? I don't think so. But I think that there is, I think we have to be accessible to one another, and that our lives weave together meaningfully rather than perfunctorily or mechanically, so that our natural rhythms of life come together in a fundamental way. So we have a variety of expressions in our own community. We have urban, non-urban settings, and not everyone lives in exactly the same building, but they are able to do life together in an organic way, and that's why I mentioned, you know, within walking distance. I know of communities around the country where it's not real feasible to find one big building where they can all live together, but they've chosen to find residential homes in a general neighborhood where you can, you know, be within a 5 or 10 minute walking distance. So again, I think a lot depends on, you know, what you want to express and what you want to live out. Those who resist the idea of proximity, I think there's a resistance there to sharing as much of life together as possible. Now, we also have different personalities. So, you know, some are more introverted and some are more extroverted and so forth. And so there's no perfect pattern, and we have to be sensitive to that. But I think if we ignore proximity, I think we're ignoring one of the core components of sharing life together.
I wonder if you could talk about just the practices of community that makes a group of people living together a community, because I think everyone could think of even a married couple who are essentially roommates because they share the same space, but there's no community, there's no fellowship. And so I wonder what it is, what are some of the things that make a group of people a community?
That's a good distinction, because just because you share the same space does not mean you really have community. And I have a number of pieces in the book that point that out. So what are those things? That's really a good question. I think first of all, there will be a desire to go beyond functioning together. So you can be in the same house, you know, and be housemates and share the rent, and that has utility value. But it doesn't mean you're sharing your lives together. So I think being vulnerable about what you're thinking, what you're feeling, I think that's going to be important. Being vulnerable about your own needs, your struggle in the areas of temptation, sin. I think that concrete practices of serving one another where you actually do depend on one another. Making life, arranging life in a way that you really need each other. So, in our own community, we have people who make sure the meals are taken care of, the shopping is done, the gardens are growing, and we're participating in one another, and we need each other so that there's food on the table or the children are taken care of. For every community, it will be different, but I think the practices where you actually really do need one another is very, very important. Taking time, true time, with and for one another. Finding ways to actually work together. If you can't have a common business like our community has several common businesses, to still try to find ways where there's various projects or way to serve together. And you wouldn't be able to do the task at hand without others. So it takes some intentionality. It means seeking together how to make that truly happen. In a way, the sky is the limit. But it's going to be more than just an hour Bible study or an hour prayer time, and then you go on with your life. There has to be real meaningful intersections where you really do need each other.
I wonder what your favorite chapter or favorite chapters in the book are, if you have any that aren't your own.
Yeah, well, those are probably really are not my favorite chapters. That's a good question. The book is divided into four sections. Mm-hmm. And it kind of follows a pattern that part one, A Call to Community, kind of lays down the vision or the foundation of why we live in community, what it's all about. The chapter by Gerhard Lofink on embodiment very much. The next section is, how do you begin forming community? And I love the chapter by Jean Vanier entitled Communion. I think they're... The chapter Life's Task by Eberhard Arnold is fantastic. It distinguishes between communion and real community the semblance of human life together. But there's a lot in there, chapters on idealism, illusions, God's Call by Henry Nouwen are excellent. The section part three is life in community. Okay, so what's daily life? What does it take for daily life, in daily life for community to flourish, be a joyful, flourishing experience? I love the chapter by John Alexander, who was a friend of mine, who's no longer living. He helped with another friend of mine to start a community that's still in existence in San Francisco, Church of the Sojourners. He has a great chapter on vocation. And the reason why I like that one is that often what we feel is our individual callings and the like, or careers, actually hinder people from living out a life together in Christ. We actually are more beholden and devoted to our career and work than we like to admit. And that's a an excellent chapter. The one on conflict by David Jansen, who is another friend of mine, who lives at Reba Fellowship in Chicago, wrote a very, very good piece there. And Family Values by Andy Crouch is fantastic. And the role of singleness in community with families. And then, of course, Celebration is great. Jean Vanier from the L'Arche has some wonderful things to say, because often people who are attracted to community tend to take their faith very seriously and they're really radical, and then they forget to enjoy life together. The community is a gift. It's not just some kind of radical, serious form of life. And then the last section of the book is, okay, so we have a life together. It's flourishing. Is it just for ourselves? No. The gift of community is for other people. So what does that mean? How do we share our life together with others? And this chapter called Good Fences is important, because many communities form around a ministry of some sort, like the Catholic Worker Movement, the Ministry of Hospitality. But and you want to reach out in the name of Christ to others. But if you're not careful, that can completely undermine and dissipate your life together. So, you know, again, it's like a family. You have to gather together as a family. It doesn't mean you self-circle around yourselves at the exclusion of others. But if you're not careful, you can erode your family life with all kinds of other things. And you can be stretched so thin that the thing that really matters disappears.
I really like the Good Fences chapter. Elizabeth, is it Deed?
Yes.
Yeah, I really liked her portion in that chapter. That was really excellent.
Yeah, that actually came out of her own experience with a community that it's called the Open Door Community in Atlanta, that I think had been around for about 30 years, and just this last year it had to close down. Its main emphasis was reaching out to the homeless. So that comes out of her experience.
You mentioned David Jansen too, just for listeners. He's been on the show before, back in episode 73, if anybody's interested in checking out that. He was on talking about the Intentional Christian Community Handbook. Charles, it's been so good to talk with you. Thanks for taking the time. And thank you for this book. I feel like it's really valuable, and it's itself is meant to be read in community. And so, you know, I really hope people will take it in their church small groups or what have you, and read together and contemplate.
Yes, thank you for making mention of that. There's 52 chapters meant to be kind of read together for a seeking fellowship, one chapter a week to really think about. There's some reflection questions at the back of the book. So I appreciate you you know, having me, Shane, and it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Charles.
All right. You take care.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have, and I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code Seminary Dropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at @beardonabike. That's @beardonabike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah, that my best.